A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's reflecting on a trip to Frankfurt that went sideways. He booked it thinking it'd be this authentically German, laid-back beer-drinking city, and instead discovered what millions of transit passengers already know. Frankfurt is a place you pass through, not a place you visit. The Lufthansa check-in agent was genuinely surprised it was his final destination. So, his question is, what are the actually good versions of that impulse? Cities that are easy to reach with direct flights or one stop, but that sit just off the Instagram trail. Places that haven't been overwhelmed by tourists, but are worth the trip. And he's also asking about the ones that take a bit more effort, the truly special places that reward the extra leg.
The Frankfurt problem is so specific and so real. I pulled the numbers on this. Frankfurt Airport handled 70 million passengers in 2025. Overnight tourists in the city, 1.2 million. That's a ratio of 58 to 1. For every 58 people who land at that airport, exactly one person stays.
58 to 1. That's not a ratio. That's a warning label.
Compare it to Munich. Munich Airport had about 47 million passengers and roughly 6 million overnight tourists, ratio of about 8 to 1. Still a transit hub, but people actually want to be there. Frankfurt is the platonic ideal of a city that exists for business travelers and connecting flights. It has a stunning skyline if you're into 1980s banking architecture, a rebuilt old town that opened in 2018 and already feels like a theme park, and a red light district near the central station that the tourism board would rather you didn't notice.
Daniel mentioned the crime rate, which is a thing. Frankfurt has the highest crime rate per capita of any German city. It's not dangerous by global standards, but it's not the leisurely beer garden experience he was picturing.
That's the trap, right? He made a completely reasonable assumption. Major international airport, major German city, must be worth visiting, but airport traffic and tourist appeal are almost entirely uncorrelated. Some of the most visited cities in Europe have relatively modest airports. Dubrovnik's airport handles about 3 million passengers a year and the city gets crushed. Meanwhile, Frankfurt's airport is a global superhub and the city is a ghost town for tourism.
The question becomes, how do you systematically find the cities that are well connected but undervisited? Because most travel advice is binary. Either go to the famous places, Barcelona, Rome, Amsterdam, or go somewhere completely obscure with no flights and a bus schedule written in chalk. There's a middle band, and that's where the value is.
That's exactly what I wanted to map out. I spent time with flight route data, Eurostat tourism statistics, National Tourism Board reports, and cross-referenced everything against visitor density per capita. The goal was to find cities that have international airports, direct or one-stop connections from major hubs, and are dramatically undervisited relative to what they offer.
What pattern jumped out at you?
The strongest signal is what I'd call the second city shadow effect. When a country has one superstar destination, the second and third cities often get overlooked, even when they're spectacular. Bilbao versus Barcelona, Gdansk versus Krakow, Turin versus Rome. These aren't obscure villages. They're major cities with international airports, UNESCO sites, incredible food cultures, and a fraction of the tourist load.
The Bilbao case is fascinating because the Guggenheim was supposed to change everything. It did change everything. It put Bilbao on the map, but it never translated into mass tourism the way you'd expect.
Bilbao had about 1.1 million tourists in 2025. Barcelona had 12 million. That's an 11-to-1 ratio. Bilbao has a Frank Gehry masterpiece, a Pintexos culture that rivals anything in San Sebastian, a Basque identity that's distinct from the rest of Spain, and it's reachable with direct seasonal flights from Tel Aviv or year-round via Madrid. And is still dramatically undervisited.
What's keeping people away? It's not access.
It's the itinerary problem. The standard Spain trip is Madrid, Barcelona, Seville, maybe Granada if you're ambitious. Bilbao is in the north. It's not on the high-speed rail corridor that connects Madrid to Barcelona to the south, and it requires a conscious decision to deviate from the standard route. Most travelers, especially first-timers, default to the established circuit. They're not making a negative judgment about Bilbao. They're just not thinking about it at all.
Which is exactly what Daniel was trying to avoid. He didn't want the established circuit. He just picked the wrong off-circuit city.
Frankfurt is the cautionary tale. Bilbao is the corrective. Let me give you another one. Fly to Warsaw or Berlin, then a one-hour connection. 2025 visitor numbers, 3.5 million tourists versus Krakow's 10 million. The Polish Tourism Board's own data shows that 73% of international visitors to Poland go to Krakow or Warsaw. Gdańsk gets 11%.
11% of the international visitors for a city that has a completely intact medieval old town, a Baltic coast, amber beaches, and the Solidarity Museum.
The old town is rebuilt, not original. It was flattened in World War II and reconstructed brick by brick. But it's stunning, and honestly, the reconstruction story is part of what makes it interesting. You're walking through a city that was deliberately resurrected. The Solidarity Museum is world-class. The maritime history is deep, and because it's on the Baltic, you get a completely different climate and feel from the Polish interior.
The price differential.
A nice meal in Gdańsk's old town will run you maybe 40% of what you'd pay for the equivalent in Krakow's main square. Hotels are cheaper, museums are less crowded. The tourist infrastructure is excellent because the city wants visitors. It's just not getting the volume.
That's a knock-on effect worth sitting with. The under-visited cities often have better infrastructure because they're trying to attract tourists. The tourist tax in Venice is 10 euros per day. In Turin, it's 2 euros 50.
Let's talk about Turin. 2025 visitor count, 2.8 million. Rome, 30 million. That's more than a 10-to-1 ratio. Turin has the Egyptian Museum, which is second only to Cairo's. It has 40 kilometers of porticos that are UNESCO listed. It has the Fiat and Lingotto history, which is fascinating industrial heritage. It's the birthplace of Italian chocolate. Gianduja was invented there. And it's 1 hour by Frecciarossa train from Milan Malpensa.
The barrier is basically a train transfer.
Basically a train transfer. And most tourists can't be bothered. They land at Malpensa, they take the express to Milan Centrale, and they stay in Milan or continue on to Rome, Florence, Venice. Turin is right there, and it's invisible to the standard Italian itinerary.
What's the actual experience difference between, say, Turin and Venice at peak season?
Venice had about 25 million overnight visitors in 2025. Turin had 2.8 million. Walking through St. Mark's Square at 2 in the afternoon in July is an exercise in crowd management. You're shoulder to shoulder with thousands of people, most of them holding phones at arm's length. Walking through Turin's porticos at the same time of day, you're in a covered arcade with maybe a dozen other people, you can actually look at the architecture, and you can walk into a cafe and the owner will talk to you because they're not turning tables every 45 minutes.
The cafe owner who has time to talk to you. That's the metric that matters. That's what Daniel was actually looking for in Frankfurt. He wanted the beer garden where locals hang out, not the business hotel lobby bar.
And the beer garden exists. It's just not in Frankfurt.
We've got Bilbao, Gdańsk, Turin. These are the one-stop or less well-connected, under-visited cities. What about the category that takes a bit more effort but delivers something truly special?
Fly direct to Sofia from Tel Aviv. Bulgaria Air and Wizz Air both run that route. Then a 2-hour bus or train. 2025 visitor count, 1.2 million. Plovdiv was the European Capital of Culture in 2019. It has a Roman amphitheater that's still used for performances. It's built across 7 hills. The old town is a maze of Bulgarian Revival architecture. And here's the stat that tells the story. Bulgaria's tourism is 80% concentrated on the Black Sea coast in Sofia. Plovdiv is one of the oldest continuously inhabited cities in Europe. We're talking 8,000 years of settlement, and it's almost invisible to international tourists.
8,000 years. That's the kind of thing that would be the entire marketing campaign if it were in Italy or France.
It's not. It's in Bulgaria, which most travelers treat as a beach destination or a Sofia stopover. The food scene in Plovdiv is incredible. Bulgarian cuisine is this, crossroads of Mediterranean, Slavic, and Ottoman influences, and in Plovdiv, you're getting it at family-run restaurants that haven't been optimized for tourist palates.
There's a broader mechanism at work here, and I think it's worth naming. The Instagram trail is a self-reinforcing loop. Research from 2025 shows that 68% of travelers under 35 choose destinations based on Instagram content. That creates a winner-take-all dynamic. A few cities get all the attention, and nearby alternatives get almost none.
The Instagram effect is brutal for destination diversity. Santorini gets crushed while Naxos, which is a 45-minute ferry away and arguably more beautiful, is half empty. Barcelona gets 12 million visitors while Bilbao gets 1.1 million. The algorithm rewards the places that are already famous because they generate more engagement, which makes them more famous, which generates more engagement. It's a flywheel that concentrates tourism into an ever smaller number of destinations.
The knock-on effect is that the undervisited cities start actively trying to attract tourists, which means they invest in infrastructure, they keep prices reasonable, and they're happy to see you. The restaurant owner in Turin isn't exhausted by tourists. The museum in Plovdiv isn't running timed entry slots.
The pricing signal is real. Venice charges 10 euros a day just to enter the city. Amsterdam has been running anti-tourism campaigns. Barcelona locals are spraying tourists with water pistols. Meanwhile, Turin charges 2 euros 50 in tourist tax, and the museums are uncrowded. The market is telling you something.
Let's give people a framework. You mentioned the three-filter method. Walk me through it.
The idea is that anyone can find their own undervisited destination by applying three filters to any region they're interested in. Filter 1, population. Look for cities with populations over 500,000 that are not the most populous city in their region or country. This automatically screens out the primary destinations. Filter 2, airport traffic. Look for cities with an international airport that handles fewer than 10 million passengers annually. This screens out the major hubs. Filter 3, social media presence. Check how many Instagram posts are tagged with the city name. If it's under 50,000 posts per month, you're probably in undervisited territory.
Let's test the framework on a couple of cities.
Population about 670,000. Not the largest city in Poland, that's Warsaw. Airport handles about 3.5 million passengers annually, well under the 10 million threshold. Instagram posts per month, roughly 180,000. That's a bit over the 50,000 threshold, but not dramatically so, and it's still a fraction of Krakow's numbers. Wrocław has a stunning market square, a complex history that includes being part of Germany as Breslau, and a network of over 100 bridges. It's a viable candidate. Smaller, population about 125,000, so it misses the population filter if you're strict about the 500,000 cutoff. But its airport handles about 500,000 passengers, and it has roughly 40,000 Instagram posts per month. It has one of the most beautiful Gothic cathedrals in Spain. It's on the Camino de Santiago, and the tapas culture is legendary. In León, tapas come free with your drink, which is increasingly rare in Spain. If you're willing to relax the population filter for a smaller city with outsized cultural value, León is a gem.
The framework is adjustable. The point is to have a systematic way of looking, rather than just typing underrated European cities into a search engine and getting the same listicle everyone else gets.
And the listicle problem is real. If you Google Hidden Gems Europe, you get the same 20 cities that have been on every travel blog since 2018. The framework lets you find your own.
Let's make this actionable. If someone listening wants to book one of these trips tomorrow, what do they actually do?
For Bilbao, Iberia, and Vueling run direct seasonal flights from Tel Aviv. Year-round, you can fly to Madrid and connect, or fly to Madrid and take the high-speed train. It's about 5 hours from Madrid to Bilbao by rail, which is a scenic trip through the Basque country. Book the Guggenheim in advance, but leave most of your time for the Casco Viejo, the old town, where the Pintexos bars are. Each bar specializes in one or two Pintexos, so you bar hop. That's the culture. LOT Polish Airlines via Warsaw. The connection is quick. Warsaw to Gdańsk is about an hour in the air. Alternatively, fly to Berlin and take the train. It's about 6 hours, but you go through some beautiful countryside. In Gdańsk, the European Solidarity Center is essential. The old town is walkable and compact. And if you go in summer, the beaches at Sopot, which is a 15-minute train ride, are lovely. White sand, Baltic Sea, totally different vibe from the Mediterranean. Fly to Milan Malpensa, then the Frecciarossa high-speed train from Milano Centrale to Torino Porta Nuova. 1 hour, trains run constantly. It's painless. The Egyptian Museum needs a half-day minimum. The Mole Antonelliana, which houses the National Cinema Museum, is one of the most distinctive buildings in Italy. And the chocolate. Caffarel, the company that invented Gianduja, is based there. You can visit the factory. Bulgaria Air or Wizz Air direct to Sofia. From Sofia, buses run to Plovdiv every hour. It's about 2 hours, costs roughly 15 shekels equivalent. The Roman amphitheater is the headline, but the real joy is wandering the Capanna district, which is the old Crass neighborhood turned into a warren of cafes and galleries. And the prices are absurdly low by Western standards. A very good dinner for two with wine might run you the equivalent of 60 shekels.
There's a mindset shift here that's bigger than any individual destination. Most people optimize for the best destination. They want the most beautiful, the most historic, the most Instagram famous. But the best meal you'll ever have in Italy probably won't be in Rome. It'll be in a city where the restaurant owner has time to talk to you, because they're not turning tables every 45 minutes.
The best destination is a trap, because it's also the most crowded, the most expensive, and the most optimized for extracting money from tourists rather than serving them something authentic. The right destination is the one where the experience hasn't been sanded down by mass tourism.
Daniel's Frankfurt mistake was assuming that a major German city would be the right destination. It was the wrong heuristic. The right heuristic is, look for the cities in the shadow of the superstars.
That shadow is where you find the real stuff. The Pinzos bar in Bilbao, where the owner explains each one to you because you're the only non-local there. The Amber Workshop in Gdansk, where the craftsman shows you how he works because he's not swarmed with tour groups. The chocolate shop in Turin, where they let you taste the Gianduja straight from the tempering machine.
There's an open question here that's worth sitting with. What happens when these cities get discovered? Bilbao's tourism grew 40% between 2019 and 2025. That's significant. The window for undervisited is closing on some of these places.
That's the tension. The very act of recommending these cities accelerates the process that makes them less undervisited. Bilbao in 2030 might look very different from Bilbao in 2026. The 4 million visitor mark is a tipping point for a lot of mid-sized cities. That's when the infrastructure starts straining, the tourist zones start hardening, and the authentic experiences start retreating to the periphery.
The real skill isn't knowing which cities are undervisited today. It's learning how to find the next wave before it crests. The three-filter method is a skill, not a list.
That skill becomes more valuable as remote work normalizes slow travel. The undervisited city of 2026 might be the digital nomad hub of 2030. We're already seeing this pattern. Lisbon was the undervisited alternative to Barcelona 10 years ago. Now it's expensive and crowded, and the nomads are moving to Porto. Then they'll move to Braga. The wave keeps moving.
The methodology matters more than the specific recommendation. If you learn to read airport traffic data, tourism statistics, and social media density, you can find your own Bilbao or Gdansk or Plovdiv in any region of the world.
The payoff is real, not just in money saved, though that's significant, but in the quality of the experience, the conversation with the cafe owner, the empty museum gallery, the plaza where you're the only person sitting there at sunset. Those moments are increasingly rare in the superstar destinations, and they're still abundant in the shadow cities.
If you want to start practicing this, pick a region you're interested in. Pull up the list of cities with international airports. Eliminate the ones you've already heard of 100 times. Check the Instagram post counts. Look at the tourism board data. You'll find something.
If you want to start with one of the cities we mentioned, the booking paths are straightforward. Bilbao via Madrid, Gdansk via Warsaw, Turin via Milan, Plovdiv via Sofia. All bookable today.
The Lufthansa check-in agent who was surprised Daniel was staying in Frankfurt. That's the test. If the check-in agent is surprised you're staying, you might be in the wrong city. If they nod and say, oh, you'll love it there, you're probably in the right one.
If they say, I've never heard of it, you've gone too far. There's a sweet spot.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1895, a British surveyor in Kiribati calculated that one coconut crab can exert a pinch force of 3,300 newtons, which, in the imperial units of the time, he recorded as approximately 742 pounds of pressure, or roughly the weight of a small upright piano dropped from a height of 1 foot. The Victorians really did measure everything in pianos.
Right. One forward-looking thought before we go. The cities we talked about today, Bilbao, Gdansk, Turin, Plovdiv, they're the right answer for 2026. But the real takeaway is the method. Learn to read the data. Learn to spot the shadow cities, and you'll never book a Frankfurt again. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone about it. Word of mouth is how people find the undervisited stuff, podcasts included. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.